things we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings, Voice of America listeners. I'm Muck Bill Yabro in for Sunny Young on this Wacky Sports Wednesday. Let's get into the October 4th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Kicking off the show with the all-exciting Champions League football. I'm joined by my colleagues Mike Hove and Kali Abdu to dive deep into some unexpected results from Arsenal and Manchester United, along with a masterclass by Real Madrid's 20-year-old star Jude Bellingham. Let's jump right into it. On the segment today, I have with me my guys Kali Abdu and Mike Hove. Gentlemen, it is great to be on with you today.
Yes, sir.
What's good?
Yes, sir. So let's jump right into it. We will be discussing Champs League mainly. But before we get into that, we need to talk about this English Premier League. We need to discuss this Liverpool versus Tottenham, this decision that we spoke about earlier on with the VAR and how it's shaping out to be. Either of you, what are your thoughts right now on where it is? Because the audio has just come out now about the VAR. What are your thoughts?
VAR, which is thought. I mean, it's supposed to improve the game. That's the interesting part about that. So to even go back to that situation, it's really interesting that that still played out. It's also showing, I guess, that human error still goes into play regardless of how you try and improve the game with VAR. Honestly, that was just a seriously unfortunate incident that shouldn't have happened. If we're going to be very frank,
what do you think should be the next steps? I believe Liverpool is saying that they are trying to take some legal action. Kali, what do you think are the options on the table for them?
Yeah, it seems like they want the league to first of all review the VAR officials, because apparently FIFA has designated VAR officials, but Liverpool is saying the league needs to train its own VAR officials to do stuff specifically different from, you know, whatever the FIFA, because it seems like these guys are designated by FIFA.
Okay.
So they want that reviewed, and they also, they're talking legal, but I don't know to what extent. But I know that the league has either they've suspended those guys. Those guys aren't going to, be a part of any games going forward. You know, I don't know if it's temporary or permanent. So it seems like something is shaking. I just don't know what the extent of Liverpool's request is legally, whether they're requesting for a replay, whether they're requesting for their point to be given back to them, or whether they're actually saying, if they're trying to sue someone. But it seems like strong words, but I don't know to what degree.
Yeah. Mike, out.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, it's a very interesting situation, because it's like, okay, what exactly are you trying to achieve by especially taking the legal course of this? Mm-hmm. Is that, are you asking for the 3 points? Are you asking for a pullback? What exactly are you asking for? And at the same time, there's one, from a casual viewer, you go, oh, okay, let's say they give you the 3 points, so what? But then from a long haul standpoint, you realize that 3 points is the difference between winning and losing the championship, you know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
So I also kind of understand the whole situation behind it, but it also goes back to, like I said, this is human error. You suspend these guys, this can happen again. Of course, I do understand and I do agree the fact that they need to start training more people, and it needs to be more people that you are accountable for.
Right.
But at the same time, this is human error. This is something that could happen in football.
Yeah, I think just a tad bit of a pushback on the human error aspect. It is human error nonetheless, but my issue with it was having read the transcript versus listening to the audio, mm-hmm. it completely changed my perspective on it. When I listen to the audio, you can hear another assistant or the person who's not making the decision saying, hey, there's a call being made from up top, mm-hmm. and we're being told we need to delay this game.
Mm-hmm.
The person who's supposed to now be making the decision says, the game is on. I can do nothing at this point. Now, the problem that I have with that is it's showing two different authoritative figures. Mm. The higher up is saying delay the game.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that this individual now can trump that,
overrule
the call, and say that I'm not going to delay the game? And what is his benefit
right.
in doing that as well, because right. a delay of game is nonetheless just a delay of yeah, game mm-hmm. if you're getting the call yeah. right. Mm-hmm. I don't understand what his point was on not doing it, because now if he does delay the game, he can say it came up from up top.
Right.
What is his reasoning?
And besides, this yeah. same league, these same, not the same exact refs, but the same ref body has been okay with restarting it. I don't know if Manu was involved, but there was a call to end the game. Game right. is over, and then they came back and said,
"Yo, penalty, right?"
So there's precedent.
Mm-hmm.
So when the law is very, vague like that, it opens room for humans to get away with murder and say, "Well, human error."
But that's why I said it goes back to human error, right? Yeah. Is that the law itself? It's not strict. It's open to interpretation,
yes.
and you as a referee, it's open.
You can use it
that way.
Right.
You could use these different layers of, listen, the game was going.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
You can use the, but I had to blow that because the upstairs. It really comes down to the referee on the day of. It's really, until the law itself. So maybe that's why I said that Liverpool situation really would be helpful to the game.
Yeah.
Because maybe now authorities will say, you know what, when this happens, it needs to be strict. I also want to say this.
There's no reason for the Premier League not to adopt the same technology that was used in Qatar.
Mm-hmm.
That technology that shows you the actual body, a 3D
right.
image of the body.
Mm-hmm.
It's not lines. It's the full body.
Right.
So you can't argue it.
Right.
They need to adopt that. Because I read that for whatever reason, either the league or the teams rejected that technology.
I do have a question about that, though. It's state-of-the-art technology, and I do applaud that. But does it not take away from the innocence and the human aspect of the game?
Man, so to me, I've been a somewhat of a purist, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when VAR was initially introduced, I was given a pushback like, look, we've seen some of the greatest moments in the game happen. Maradona's hand,
right.
which is crazy to me, but it's like, that was so epic.
Right.
And he got away with it, right? So my thing is, you take all of those aspects away.
You take away the storylines, pretty much.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So when you're using VAR, I'm all about, if you're going to use it all the way.
Right.
It seems to me like they want to adopt it, the EPL, but don't want to adopt it fully.
Okay. Yeah.
So you're still giving yourself that wiggle room to be like, hey, from a purist standpoint, you're not just giving us everything. It's still, the referee still has to be there. This is not a technology taking my job.
Right.
You see?
Right.
Now, that's the problem, because if they adopt that portion, maybe a team of three or four now is only one person who's just now reviewing that exact.
Mm-hmm. Now, the problem they're having is Liverpool, whether it's the team, the club itself, or the fans, they're now questioning the integrity of the sport. Because I think I read those words. It's affecting the integrity. What that means is, what a lot of fans are speculating, if you go online, is there's betting. there's some betting implications.
That's always been a thought.
So if the league don't want that to be
the narrative,
they need to do something about it, because it's either you, like you say, you go all in and you make your laws very straightforward, or if you leave it ambiguous like that, people will start to assume that there's some betting going on and refs or VAR officials are betting, and who knows what's going to happen after that. It will no longer be the game we know.
Right. Yeah. So now that we put that aside, we'll definitely keep you all posted on that in the next coming days if there are any more developments on that. Let's jump into the Champions League action, gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Of the games that were played yesterday.
To neutral, speak on these two games.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because, hey, no shade. Yeah. It's just, I'm going to tell the truth. I really thought both of your teams, Man U and Arsenal, control the game to a certain degree until it's like the wheels just came off.
Yeah.
Because for Arsenal, you were leading, you guys were in control,
right?
And then the wheels came off. Now, I'll let you talk about why. And then for you, Haaland had the game of his life.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I felt so sad for him. And I think the camera panned on him when they scored. It's like, he's done everything. You could see it on his face. Yeah. What more did I need to do?
He's doing his job.
Yeah.
But his teammates that are supposed to be doing the rest, like if I come to work and do my portion and somebody else doesn't do their part,
it's a problem.
It's a bad feeling, you know?
I felt bad for him, but either way, I really thought that he did enough to have won that game
Absolutely.
For United.
So I guess we're starting with United. United right now is going through a very interesting time period. And it's really hard to highlight what exactly the problem is, because every game that we've played so far, The last time I think we got dominated was most likely probably Wolves, if not Tottenham, right? Every game so far, there's an element of we have this.
Yeah.
Until something loses it. And the moment we lose it, United has, to, up until probably the last game where we played Wolves and we won 3-0, we didn't show that exercise of we can pull this back and own this.
Mm.
And United really is going through that moment right now where a lot of the times we have the game until we lose it. And from that moment where we lose it,
yeah,
there's no, it's like an uphill task for the team. So it's really, listen, United really is interesting. I mean, even going into the Galatasaray game, listen, I'm a United fan and I love United, but I wasn't confident that we'll walk away with 3 points with this, merely based on the previous performance that we just had. United has yet to show a standpoint where you can walk into any game confidently that you're walking with 3 points. Now, granted, with championships and these little league tournaments, we seem to keep playing well. So I'm hoping that, you know, with Champs League moving forward, we'll be able to change that around. But
yeah, allow me to ask this, because I'm curious why, though. Because here's a manager who was supposedly elite, right? Took Ajax to the Champions League final, you know, a couple years ago. He's really good. You have players who are absolute world class. You have Casemiro. You have Amrabat. Amrabat playing the Europa League final or semifinal last year. You can just keep naming them. Players who are supposedly absolute world class. Why are they not gelling? Is it the management? Is it the, you know? So I just don't understand it.
That's a very broad question, because there's a billion theories that could come out to why United is not working right now.
Yeah.
To start off with, for me, as and I say this as a fan, I don't really have complete confidence in our centre backs. Like we spoke about all early on off mic, the combination of our centre backs and our keeper, it's just not working out. Right? We got a new keeper that I was like, okay, this guy might be the guy to change the game. But now the way that the game's changing, little did I know that we still needed De Gea.
I was telling him, you bought a keeper to pass from the back, but to whom?
Exactly.
He doesn't have people to pass to the back who
he
can hold it.
He doesn't have that pillar to block him confidently.
He has people in front of him who are panicking.
Right.
So
yeah.
In that case, you don't need to pass from the back. You need to just boot it up and get it away from
the goal. It's a different kind of problem. Yeah.
But so, you guys have a different problem. You guys are good to go. It's like...
But, okay, so, man, so now if we're going to jump to Arsenal, Arsenal versus Lens. Lens, anyone who really knows RC Lens knows that when you go to play in their stadium, it is loud, they're obnoxious, they're a fan base that's like everything you've ever seen about football, that just love it. Like, their stadium is a little outside of Lens, and it's maybe... It's always max capacity. 35, they said, to 37,000. The town itself only has 30,000 people.
So 7,000 people coming in.
7,000 people are coming through, like, outside. So it's like it's an environment whereby they're an exciting team. Like, they were in the second division of League Two not too long ago. Then they made it their way all the way up to second place last year. So they have this core fan base of, like, the hometown heroes, you know? So because of that, anytime you come to play there, it's going to be difficult and challenging for you. Now, Arsenal, we've been on a roll. This is our first loss since Nottingham. Like, we don't just go out and lose. We were the last English Premier team to not have lost, really, you know? That drops and everything. Arteta has put in a situation of a bunch of different lineups where a lot of the guys are getting familiar enough with each other that they can play with each other, right? So everyone is getting their touches, everyone's getting their reps in, everyone's getting their runs in. The problem is when a catalyst such as Saka, to me, who I think is our most important player, you know, has an injury scare against Bournemouth and we beat them 4-0, you then play him in this game that you know is not really a monumental game. Even now that we've lost the game, we're still in second standings in that group. It was not a make or break type of game. You should have rested him. You play him, he gets hurt. Now, it changes everything, because when you put in the replacement, you're not really, you don't have Saka on the wing now. That's usually supposed to be creating the game for you. Then we have Raya, who plays, like we just mentioned, plays with his feet, is really good with his feet. But what does he do? He's the one who causes that first goal as well, because he passes into a space where Lens was pressing up. Right. You know, they were pressing up. He moves up really high, similarly to Onana. But I think he's better with his hands than Onana is in saving. Mm. The problem was it was just world-class technique in how they finished against us. When they were given the opportunity, they were just more efficient. We had so many opportunities to score.
Yeah, I'm looking at the group, right? And I honestly think that you can control the group. But the thing that's scaring me is Sevilla and PSV. You know, they played the 2-2 draw yesterday. When I was looking at that, I said, it seems like Arsenal could potentially have three banana skins, where if they're not, if everything doesn't go well accordingly for you guys, if you have any injuries, any slight mistakes, like you said, Raya made a mistake, bang, it affects you. Just like Jorginho made a mistake, it just affects you. So it seems like you're in this position where you literally can't afford any mistakes, because if you make a mistake like that against Sevilla, it seems like they could punish you. Or PSV, they're not teams that lack quality, if you will.
You know, the problem is, I think that it's always our biggest problem, I think, is consistent scoring up top.
Okay.
I think that's our biggest issue. It's like and that's why we're, you know, January transfer market, we're going to be on a lookout for a true nine.
Got to go for the Osimhen,
man, if he's there, you know. Tony, you know what I'm saying, he's going to be back in the market. He's hungry, I'm sure. He'll be solid. So all in all, man, I think we have a lot of quality players, but the one thing that we're missing the most, I think, is just a nine, a finisher that just goes there, that does nothing but just tap-ins and tip-ins. I don't need you to be elite and creating plays. They just need to just go out and just do it, you know?
Yeah.
Lastly, before we finish off, now you talk to me about this Real Madrid and Napoli game, man.
Big game.
Jude Bellingham.
Signing of the season, you know?
Easily.
Yeah. He's doing the business. I mean, everybody wanted him. Man City wanted him. I'm sure you guys wanted him.
Everybody in their right mind.
United. Everybody wanted him, and he chose Madrid, and he's doing the business for Madrid right now. Now, Napoli, man, as you know, we've discussed the issues they're having with Osimhen, but I think it's much more than that, even. Because once Spalletti left to go coach Italy, and they brought in Rudy Garcia, I believe, you know, it's just not the same. Not the same level. You could tell there was a drop. Because they're losing games they should not, of course, the Real game, but in the league, in the Serie A, they're losing games that they shouldn't lose, or tying games they shouldn't tie. But against Madrid, they held their own, you know, for the longest. It's just the quality Madrid has overshadowed Napoli's for sure.
Vinny and Jude are going to be the two most exciting players.
I agree.
To play alongside. What do you think this form that Jude is in does for him on a national side? The English national team is needed, like,
man,
that next level guy, to really put them over the top. What are your thoughts on
that? I think he can be excellent for them. But again, the problem is that there's a different manager with the national team who has a different interpretation of the game and what he wants to do on the pitch. Because that English squad, just if we're keeping it 100,000 is really crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Bench starting 11, crazy.
Right, right.
Because there's players. There's players that are not even getting a look in that with a different manager. Yeah. You know, he comes, shakes it up, mixes them. So I think that if Bellingham gets a manager that plays him the exact same way Ancelotti's playing him, he would thrive and England would benefit. But, you know, if you have a manager who thinks Bellingham should play a different way, then he may not maximize. Kind of like Paul Pogba. When Paul Pogba plays for France versus when he played for United, night and day. Because the manager of France knows how to use him correctly. Yeah. So it's just one of those things. We'll see.
So England is a very special case. I think England as a team has always done relatively well, but they haven't lived up to their status of what EPL is supposed to be, if that makes sense. But I will say Jude Bellingham is looking amazing right now. He's looking exceptional. And I think gelling together with the other superstars, it's something that even I know the last time England played internationally, and I'm talking on a world stage like the World Cup, they lost to France. I think with a Jude on point, this Jude man, even France got to watch out, if I'm going to be very frank, because he's looking amazing. And he's definitely showing capabilities of giving any player the look. He is able to feed any player the ball, and he's able to score by himself. So it's definitely
and he's
something.
He's only
20. Yeah. Right. You know what I mean?
So much upside.
So he's definitely a player to watch. As shown last night, and as shown time and time and time again, Jude Bellingham is definitely the player that Madrid really thought they were buying. He's that guy.
He's the guy that I think we all thought he was. He's panning out to be, and as Kali and I just mentioned earlier, he's, you know, what everyone expected and more. Mm-hmm. And he has an amazing ceiling, you know. So to me, seeing what it is that he's doing right now is just only a confirmation that he's willing to, in his own words, say, he's saying that he's soaking up the knowledge from these older players like a sponge, and he's not too big to want to learn from everybody.
Before you wrap up, I do have a question.
Yes.
Is Madrid winning Champions League?
Oh, that's tough because... But with their group, man, the challenges in their group and how they're able to finesse and make it shake, I think they have a really good shot. I don't think you're looking at Madrid looking like they have any, you know, weaknesses at the moment. Because City's showing us that City also has some huge injuries and some huge problems. The exhaustion from the treble is showing them.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
it's picking up.
It's picking up. So, you know, you can't lose to a Newcastle and lose to the Wolves and then think that you're going to beat Real. That's not.
I don't know who's taking Madrid right now. In this form?
Yeah. But it's early. Yeah, the thing about City,
of course.
You know,
City, they pick up steam at the end.
Yes, as we've seen, we thought this was going to be a different City this year where they start off strong. They start off very strong, and this game right here coming up Sunday is going to be a big test for him, big test for Arteta. Arteta has yet to beat Pep. You know, Saka's going to be out most likely. Even if he plays, you know, he's played entirely too many games. He's just, I think it's just wear and tear. I think he's tired.
I was going to say this about Real. The issue is if they lose, say, Bellingham to injury or Camavinga,
it's a very tight niche. True.
Yeah, their depth is not there.
Modric comes off the bench and he hasn't been playing, so he may be rusty.
He's world class, but you're right. Yeah. If you're not getting the touches, similarly to what's happening with Trossard as well. But yeah, I'm excited to see the games. Today, actually, the games today that I'm looking forward
City
to.
Today.
City plays Leipzig, and they
that's
did.
A tough game.
Yeah,
that's a
they
good
lost
game.
To them in the first round last year, but then they did them shiesty second round. You know, they punished them on the second
Dortmund
go around.
Milan too, Dortmund, kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dortmund Milan should be a good one. PSG Newcastle should be should be interesting. Newcastle's feeling themselves after beating City. You know,
that is true.
You're gonna be on a little bit of a high, right?
But you're still playing PSG.
You are, and this is a new face PSG. So. I'm interested to see PSG's. Yeah, PSG's been.
This is Mbappe's PSG.
Hakimi's PSG too. He's been working too. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting. But like I said, gentlemen, it's, you know, we could go on forever. I'll definitely have you both on shortly, as I will be doing Sunday show for quite some time. Thank you for joining me, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
Staying with football news, Barcelona 16-year-old Lamine Yamal on Monday signed a new contract through June 2026 that included a 1 billion euro buyout clause. Yamal became the youngest player to play for Barcelona at age 15 in April. He then became the youngest scorer in a European Championship qualifier when he debuted for Spain last month. African fans will be hopeful that he may play for his father's home country, Morocco, one day. Making our way over to the rugby pitch, Mike Mboni spoke with Dr. Ademole Are, the president of the Nigerian Rugby Federation, about efforts being made to boost the game's popularity in Nigeria. He says the federation has gone into partnership with some corporations to sponsor its activities.
On the issue of Nigerian national men's rugby team, which participated in the Olympic qualifiers in Zimbabwe, Nigeria presented a very formidable team in Zimbabwe. And our journey to Zimbabwe was actually started by the inclusion of Nigeria to take part in the pre-qualification for Olympic qualifiers, which was held in Mauritius. So in Mauritius, we were able to get to the finals, only second to Algeria. And that made us qualify for the Olympic qualifiers proper, which took place in Zimbabwe. The Nigerian Stallions team, the Black Stallions, are comprised of players drawn from North America, the UK, and Nigeria. We have loads of players all over the world, and Nigeria can actually become a superpower when it comes to rugby. We only need to put our acts together and get things right. In Mauritius, we did all we could to come second. And when we got to Zimbabwe to play with the likes of South Africa, Kenya, and Uganda and other world powers, it was a very Herculean task for us. Herculean task because this will be the first time that Nigeria will be getting to this level of participation in rugby. You will recall that from 24th position in Africa, we were able to move to 12 in Mauritius. And with our performance in Zimbabwe, Nigeria actually moved to the 8th position in Africa. And they played their hearts out. We did all we could to make sure that we qualify for the Olympic Games. But unfortunately, and because of the stiff opposition, an array of stars paraded by the well-endowed South Africans, the Kenyans, and other big teams, we just had to make do with what we could do. But we could do better. We could do better, and definitely we'll be looking forward to improving on our performance.
The game of rugby appears not to be as popular as football in Nigeria. What is the Nigerian Rugby Football Federation doing to make it popular?
Like it is known, rugby is not as popular as football in Nigeria. And what we are doing at the moment is to ensure that we send around the message so that people can get to know, creating awareness for the game of rugby. People can get to know what rugby is all about, going to the grassroots level, going to schools, distributing equipment, donating balls to the various regions in the nation, and sensitizing the people that, yes, rugby is back. Because most people, in all fairness, do not know that rugby is being played in Nigeria. And until we started doing all these sensitization programs, we have been involved in many seminars and workshops, where World Rugby recognized and African Rugby recognized seminars for the medical personnel, our referees, and our coaches. With this, we can lay a very solid foundation and to ensure that we get our people going.
Sir, are there lessons learned from the Olympic qualifiers held in Zimbabwe? And what are your plans for the future?
We have learned a lot of lessons from our Olympic qualifiers. We need to go back to the drawing board. We need effective and deliberate funding, not just by the government, but from major stakeholders, from people that are very much interested within and outside the country. For example, we have a partnership with Value Jets, which is a household name in Nigeria. It's an airline, a private airline that is supporting us, courtesy of African Sports Connect, which is also a South African-based organization. These are people that are really assisting us. They are helping us in our quest to ensure that rugby takes its rightful place in the country. And we intend going ahead to make sure that we do more of national league, where we can give opportunities to all our local elite players to ply their trade. We want to have more and more of them at the national team so that they can equally represent the country rather than getting majority of the players from UK. What goes along for our players in the UK is that they are always together, they play competitions together, they do things together to make sure that we have a very formidable team. And like I said, we have players scattered all over the world, and with necessary backing, with necessary financial support and proper planning, Nigeria can be a world power in rugby.
That was Dr. Ademole Are, the president of the Nigerian Rugby Federation, speaking with Iron Mike Mbonye on the phone from Abuja, Nigeria. In cricket news, India is set to host the 13th edition of the ICC Men's Cricket World Cup from October 5th to November 19th, 2023. 10 teams will play a total of 48 matches for a chance to win cricket's biggest prize. South Africa is the only team representing the continent of Africa. We'll have more in the coming days. And that's a wrap for the October 4th edition of the show. Hope you all have a great Wednesday. I'm Muck Bill Yabaro in Washington, in for